Hello there. Thank you so much for joining us for Market Sense. I'm Heather Hedges with Fidelity. We have many developments to catch you up on today, as we often do, including, of course, the latest tensions in the Middle East. Also, another sticky inflation report to talk about that has stocks losing some momentum. So to talk about what this means for investors, we are joined, as we often are, by Jurjen Timmer, Fidelity's Director of Global Macro. Also, inflation is a big reason that some Americans are experiencing something known as money dysmorphia. So maybe you've heard of body dysmorphia. That's the condition in which a person has negative and often unfounded thoughts about his or her body. Well, this is sort of along those same lines. Money dysmorphia is a new term that you may have seen out there in the media recently that describes the widespread pessimism about the economy, regardless of the actual economic situation. So we are thrilled today to welcome Yardena Montague-Rand, who is a cultural historian here at Fidelity, and she helps us understand customer behavior. We're also joined today by Randell Lenore, a Chicago-based branch leader here at Fidelity, and she's going to provide some suggested next steps for anybody who is feeling disconnected from their finances. Well, thank you so much to the three of you for joining us. I am so excited for this panel conversation today.
Great to join.
And everyone take a breath post-tax day, so congratulations. It's a pleasure to be here with you all today.
Great to see you, and I'm excited to hear what Yardena has to say.
I am too. By the way, Randell.
And Randell as well, of course.
And Randell, yes. And Randell, tax season isn't over here in Massachusetts. Some states have another day, but yes, we're almost there. So that is certainly something to celebrate. It is April 16th. I want to get caught up on some of the other headlines besides taxes. Of course, you are likely aware of the events in Israel involving Iran over the weekend. Of course, it goes without saying that our thoughts go out to everybody impacted by that. At this point, it does not seem to be affecting the markets. Of course, it's something we are watching, though. Jurjen, what have you been saying recently to investors worried about this and worried about other global conflicts as well?
Yeah, so obviously the headlines are, you know, deeply troubling, as they have been for a while now, coming out of mostly other parts of the world. But, you know, we're all affected. And, you know, I hate to put it in such cold terms, but I get asked this question a lot, and I was on TV twice on Friday. I got the same question: well, what should investors do about, you know, these geopolitical concerns? And, you know, the answer, unsatisfying as it may be, is that, you know, if it's not systemically affecting the fundamentals of the markets that we're investing in, so economic growth, earnings, interest rates, inflation, then there really isn't a lot that we can or should do other than to make sure we have a solid plan. And of course, Randell and her colleagues are there to help with that. And then to just kind of stick with that plan. And that requires some discipline and detachment to kind of be focused on that process and that journey, and less on the outcome, even though we're all obviously very invested in that outcome. And if anything, to use these headlines, if it causes volatility, to actually sit down with Randell or someone like her to rebalance, to make sure you're in the right place. And so that's always sort of my unsatisfying answer. In this particular case, I think what we're seeing happen in the Middle East, in a way, actually reinforces the trends that are already underway in our market. So, you know, our markets, I would characterize them as economy's been resilient. The stock market's been resilient. It's been able to kind of shrug off, a less likelihood that the Fed will cut rates, and other things as well. But inflation has been sticky. You mentioned the CPI report. You know, Fed Chair Jay Powell's on the tape literally right now as we speak, talking about, you know, don't get too excited about rate cuts, because we may have to hold off on them until inflation really does go in the right direction. I mean, it's gone in the right direction, but it's proving to be somewhat sticky at around 3-3.5%. And so if we think about supply chain bottlenecks, let's say the Middle East, you know, does turn worse and supply chains are affected in the Suez Canal, or oil prices go up, it basically reinforces what we're already seeing, which is that inflation has been a concern, continues to be a concern, even though the rate of change has come down. And interest rates, you know, have been pushing higher, and they're pushing higher today. The 2-year yield actually is back at 5%. It was at 4.2%. 2% just in January. So that's where the action is. And the headlines don't really change that, because the battle here, for the lack of a better term, always comes down to growth and interest rates and inflation and sentiment. And those are the balls that we continue to juggle here in the markets.
Mm-hmm. Certainly the balls we continue to juggle. And that sticky inflation is the perfect segue into our topic for today, about a lot of people feeling overwhelmed when it comes to their finances. Obviously, a major reason is inflation. It's creating that so-called money dysmorphia that I mentioned earlier. And Yardena is a cultural historian. And Yardena, you've done a lot of research on this. So first of all, when I was explaining what the show topic was for this week to other people, a lot of people hadn't heard the term money dysmorphia. So explain to us what that is and what is behind this mindset.
Sure. Money dysmorphia is having a distorted view of your finances that could lead you to make poor money decisions. It stems from a great deal of pessimism many people feel about their own financial future, that no matter what they have or what they do, which can be fairly substantial, they'll never reach their goals, whether it's getting out of debt, buying a house, or saving for retirement. And if you're never going to get there, why bother saving in the first place? You're just spinning your wheels, chasing what is always a moving target as prices for basics like housing, transportation, and higher ed continue to rise. As a result, we're seeing a lot of YOLO, you only live once spending, travel is breaking records, consumer spending is high. In fact, we've seen personal savings rates dropping to levels we haven't seen since before the 2008 crash. So money dysmorphia is a trend we really need to pay attention to. The very term dysmorphia is a clinical term that indicates a seriously debilitating condition. And as you noted earlier, Heather, while we're accustomed to seeing dysmorphia used in the context of body dysmorphia, we can say the same thing about money. We see what other people have. We see idealized versions of people's lives on social media, and it has a huge impact. Intuit's Credit Karma released research showing that money dysmorphia may be impacting close to 30% of Americans and over 40% of young people, who are, of course, our children and our grandchildren.
To your point about social media, I am seeing a lot of friends right now on my Facebook feed just today, because it's April break week here in Massachusetts, taking these extravagant trips. They seem to be YOLO trips like you're talking about, Yardena. And, you know, I'm always wondering, where are they getting the money for these trips? And also, it like you said, it gives me that fear of missing out, feeling like I should be doing it too. So we know that the research tells us that money dysmorphia impacts about 1 in 3 Americans. When we were preparing for this episode, I told a lot of people about this. Like I was saying, I was really excited about this episode and I wanted people to watch. And everybody, hands down, who I told about this episode said, "You just described me. I have money dysmorphia." So why do you think it's so widespread right now? Why are people feeling like this?
Well, it really is a result of a number of converging trends. Let's just start with the obvious, the cost of living. We are paying more for everything, food, rent, cars, car insurance. The average basket of goods and services in America is 17% higher than it was in 2020. Yes, the pace of wage increases has now caught up with the rate of inflation, which is great. But this doesn't address decades of stagnant wages and huge increases in the cost of housing, for example, or higher education. I just read that some universities are going to, I'm sorry about my light. I just read that some universities are going to crack the $90,000 a year mark, even approaching $100,000 a year.
Wow. That's incredible. $100,000 a year for education, for tuition.
Yeah, that is just nuts. It's and if you even get the 20% increase in wages, which many people did, but if you were lucky enough to get one, that isn't going to make housing or higher education more affordable. The second thing that's really contributing is the current cultural environment. The vast majority of Americans see a country in decline. The Pew Research Center shows that 70 to 80% of people see an America in 2050 that is weaker economically, less important in the world, and more politically divided, which is truly tragic. But it isn't surprising. There's been a steady erosion of public trust in our government over the last 60 years, starting with the civil rights and Vietnam eras through Watergate, oil crises, recessions, financial crises, COVID. Trust in government has gone down from about 75% under Eisenhower to 15% today. That's just a catastrophic drop in public trust. And it helps account for the nearly unprecedented division and tribalism we see in our country today. Now, the last leg of this stool is stress, right? It's the result of all of this higher cost of living, eroding public trust. Stress levels have increased across all age groups since 2019, especially among young people. The American Psychological Association measures stress annually, and they show a 5-point increase in stress pre to post pandemic. And their bar for assessing stress is high. People are asked to rate their average level of stress during the past month on a 1 to 10 point scale, with 10 being the highest level of stress. And this chart shows that nearly 1/4 of Americans say their stress levels over the past month are an 8, 9, or 10. I mean, that's truly awful. At this level, people report their stress is completely overwhelming and they're so stressed they feel numb, right? With this kind of division we're seeing, the lack of trust, add in climate change, war, all this stress, and we see that people are looking for control, they're looking for security, and they'd rather play it safe.
Well, yeah, and add in the events of the Middle East that we just talked about at the top of the show, you know, only the latest stressor to add to that equation. I mean, that sounds like off the charts stress, Randall. And I'm surprised that they're only being rated from 1 to 10, because I feel like a lot of my friends would say they are more than a 10 when it comes to their stress levels. All right. Well, thank you for shining a light on that for us, Yardena, so to speak, figuratively and literally. Randall, we need a reality check here. I would love to bring you in now, because this is where you really help us reframe our thinking. What do you tell a customer who is stressed out for all of those reasons that Yardena just laid out? How do we break this negative and inaccurate thinking?
Yeah, I'm reflecting on all the things that she said. And like, to my point, like people in my life that I've encountered and my team, we see people all the time. So I'm off track by these things. They feel like they can't reach their goal. They need encouragement to stay the course. And the bottom line is, we're here to help you turn things around. We can help you do that. Like Yardena mentioned before, like dysmorphia is at its core this difference between perception and reality. And it's a clinical situation that people deal with that's truly debilitating, but it's also debilitating from a financial perspective. So as a planning professional, I would encourage customers to take an honest look at their finances and lean into healthy habits with their financial life if you're dealing with this. So it's critical, and I say this all the time, it's critical to not make emotional decisions when it comes to your portfolio. And it may not feel like it in practice, but reflecting on it, these are often emotional decisions. So how can you move through that? I have a few considerations for you to make. The first one is to get some guidance. You know, working with a financial professional does a lot of things, but one of the many things it can do is help you calm your fears, knowing that there's somebody there to support you talking through your concerns before you act on them, and to help you stay on track and avoid mistakes, hopefully at least reduce mistakes. We all make mistakes sometimes, but that's one of the great ways that financial professionals can help. The second is limiting exposure. I'm thinking about what Yardena just said about stress. Like we're all stressed out. Mm-hmm. So if we're stressed out, it's harder to process the information that's constantly coming in. Maybe turn the ticker off on your phone. Maybe turn off the alerts from news and media, especially if you see or you experience a trend of it making you feel afraid and anxious all the time. Maybe don't obsessively open your account and check those balances like every day or even every hour. It's important to make sure that you're reviewing your account, but you want to make sure that your habits are in alignment with your countenance. So don't, give yourself some psychological space. Don't stress yourself out there.
And Randall, just to interject quickly too, it's not that we're saying don't watch Market Sense, don't be an informed consumer, right? But maybe when you're making financial decisions, maybe that's not the best time to be reading all of those headlines that are negative, right?
And to that point, like the third thing, educate yourself. And we here at Fidelity, we take pride in educating our clients with webinars like these and articles on financial professionals that can help you. And we're not just talking about headlines. We're talking about how you understand how the markets work. We're talking about understanding business cycles and economics. So if you're an expert on something, hopefully you are out there, and you've processed news information, you're able to make judgments with discernment. So education can really help with that. And then lastly, I never get tired of saying this, you know, set your own goals, create plans around them. And when in doubt, work your plan. I mean, that's 80% of the work there, working your plan. Your plan is related to your dreams, your hopes, your desires with money. So many things are not. Even like we're giving you education, we don't know you personally, right? So let this be your North Star as you're moving through your financial situations.
Such great points there, Randell. I totally agree. You know, knowledge is power. That's what Market Sense is all about. Educating, informing, of course, not, you know, trying to alarm, but helping people make informed decisions. So thank you for that. Jurrien, I know you've commented on some investors seeming hesitant to invest in equity funds recently and ETFs, even though we are in a bull market, as we've been talking about for a long time here. So I was wondering if you think this kind of ties into our topic today. Why do you think that they are hesitant? And does it tie back to money dysmorphia as well?
I think so. So, you know, investing requires some level of detachment, if you will, from everything that's happening around us, and kind of like a trust in, you know, like embracing the unknown in a way, right? Because we know the markets historically, there's a long history of financial markets, and the market goes up, you know, 60-70% of the time, on average by 10% a year, if you over a long period of time. But if it goes up 60-70% of the time, that means it goes down 30-40% of the time. And when the market goes down, you know, it shakes our confidence, as Jardena was saying, you know, it's like that uncertainty makes people very hesitant. And so I remember this, I mean, I've been around a few cycles, but after the financial crisis, I mean, it took a long time for those wounds to heal. And of course, the market had fallen, you know, over 50%. And same thing with COVID. And the market always kind of bounces faster than the fundamentals catch up, because the market's always anticipating the future. And it just takes people longer to heal from those wounds. And then they miss it if they ended up selling, which of course they shouldn't have done. But if they end up selling, they miss it. And then they feel like, well, it's too late, or it's a bubble, or like this is all created by money printing, or this or that, or deficit spending, or inflation is really just kind of, it's all like, you know, masked by inflation. And I think that kind of erodes confidence. And it's very hard, you know, this is sort of behavioral finance 101, but it's very hard to just say, I trust in the math. And, you know, the math is proven over time, even though it doesn't always work. But that's the challenge, right? We got emotional, the market's already moving ahead. And if we did end up selling because the headlines got scary, chances are we're not going to get back in time, and then we miss it. And then you come up with excuses not to participate because you feel like you missed it. So it's like a vicious cycle that if you can stay out of that cycle, it's a good thing. And that's why we have people, of course, to guide you and help you stay focused on the long term.
Really good point, Jurrien. I think a lot of people too are kind of all or nothing. They're either all in or they don't want to be in at all, and they kind of have a hard time with just riding it out, right?
And remember, we call it the wall of worry. Yep. The market climbs the wall of worry. There are always reasons, sometimes compelling ones, but there's always reasons to just say, you know what, let me just get out, and I'll ask questions later. And if we followed those impulses, chances are we're out of the markets most of the time. And, you know, as Randell knows, compounding does not work from the sidelines. You got to be in.
Yep, you got to be in the game. That's right. So, Randell, let's bring you back in now. So maybe you've been on the sidelines. Maybe you did miss out. Maybe you made some YOLO purchases like Jardena talked about. How do you get back on track? And it's not too late to right the ship, right?
It's never too late. You can get back on track today. So let me encourage you on a few things to consider. So first, I want to say, in order to be a good investor and stay being a good investor, there are just some, you know, personal finance principles I'll touch on that I think help support you psychologically or just practically. Making sure you have an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months of expenses in cash. We believe in a spending plan that's aligned with your goals. And that's usually when we talk about 50, 15, and 5. 50% essentials, 15% retirement, that's percent, and then 5% for short-term savings, and the rest can be for everything else that you want to do. But lastly, and what I really want to emphasize today is, instead of worrying about the economy or really there are really hard headlines coming out right now, the bigger risk is kind of what Jurrien was just talking about, is that you may have missed last year's rally if you're out, and you may have missed this year's rally if you're out, and now you're behind. What is that adage that more money is lost trying to avoid a market downturn than the actual market downturn. And we see this a lot dealing with clients. So what we like to say here on Market Sense is timing the market is dangerous. Instead, focus on time in the market. Like Urien said, you can't have compounding if you're not in the game. And that requires a little bit of detachment, like you said, and trust in your process, trust in your plan. So yes, there are a lot of things to be fearful about in the world today. And I don't want to undermine that. But how much should it play into your long-term investment strategy? I mean, you still have to retire. You still have to stay retired. So keep your eye on that as a center. Block out the upsetting headlines and make decisions that help you have confidence in your plan. The plan is the way that you cope with this dysmorphia. So if you feel discouraged about this situation, just remember all the things that I mentioned, but also remember that we're here to help. You can reach out. And if you're nervous about a certain situation, you can talk to somebody for free. So just let us help be your coach to help you stay on track.
Stick to the plan. That's what I got out of that. And that is the antidote to money dysmorphia. All right. One other quick thing. I know we're kind of getting close to 2:20. We like to keep this a 20-minute show for the purposes of the fact that everybody's busy and we're all stressed. And so we don't want to take up too much of your time. But I did want to say, Yardena, we're in a presidential election year. I've got to imagine that the uncertainty of the outcome could lead to further money dysmorphia, because I will say that's one of the top questions that we are getting from our customers right now, is how the election is going to impact the markets and the economy. So are you seeing that also compounding what we were talking about?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most people are not welcoming a 2020 rematch, so it's certainly adding to everyone's stress. And we know from behavioral science that stress increases our cognitive load, so it makes it hard to think, which decreases our ability to make good decisions. So really keeping those fundamentals that both Urien and Randell just spoke about in mind is just critically important.
Okay. All right, Yardena, thank you so much. Learned so much from you. Urien, before we go, what are you watching this week?
Earnings season just got underway, and interest rates are rising. So as always, it's about earnings and interest rates when it comes to the market math. And I'm watching both, but especially earnings season will be very interesting to see whether the momentum from the last quarter can be continued.
Well, this conversation really just did exceed my expectations today. I was really excited for this topic. And I just want to leave everybody with what Randell had said, but I want to echo it. And Urien said it too. If you need a coach just like Randell to help you get in the right mindset, you can talk to somebody just like her by calling us. You can go to our website. You can download our app. Just reach out. You can schedule a complimentary one-on-one planning session. Or if you have a Fidelity account through your employer, you can also log on to netbenefits.com. No pressure, but sometimes it is good to have a voice of reason, right? And finally, if you miss any part of the discussion today, just a reminder that you can watch the replay. It's up for 24 hours on LinkedIn. You can watch it on YouTube, or you can search Market Sense on Fidelity.com. We're also a podcast too. And just a reminder to keep those questions coming when you're on social media or when you're watching us on Fidelity.com, because we do use them for future episodes. So on behalf of Urien, Randell, and Yardena, thanks so much for your time today. I'm Heather Hedges. We're going to see you back here next week, I hope. Remember, we are live Tuesdays at 2 Eastern.
Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranty with regard to such information or results obtained by its use, and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation. Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the Fidelity speaker and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Diversification and/or asset allocation do not ensure profit or protect against loss. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stocks involves risks, including loss of principal. Foreign markets can be more volatile than U.S. markets due to the increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. Fixed income investments entail interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall. The risk of issuer or counterparty default, issuer credit risk, and inflation risk. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic, and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Fidelity Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors, LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors, LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, FSB, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services, LLC, NFS. Each a member, NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. This information is intended to be educational and is not tailored to the investment needs of any specific investor. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.